entering the realm between the hidden and forgotten. A slipstream caught between realities. A secret museum of the esoteric. The private library of shadows, all taking place in a world forged from mystery and caught between logic and myth. You are entering Parareality.
Hello and welcome to the mysterious world of Parareality. This is a realm where the blurred lines between what's real and unreal merge together, forming an alternate reality, where truth and fiction become indistinguishable. I'm Sandman, and I'm your host. Good evening, everyone, and thanks for joining me in the secret bunker tonight for another episode of the Parareality Podcast. Tonight, you and I are going to be investigating a familiar event in U.S. history. However, we're not going to be looking at it in the usual way because I don't do that here on this podcast, right? Why would we? This is the Parareality Podcast, and one thing we definitely don't do is look at things in a normal way. What we're going to be looking at tonight is a conspiracy theory within a conspiracy theory. A mystery wrapped in an enigma. It's an almost 60-year-old cold case that's been begging to be solved, yet there is very little evidence as to who committed the crime or really why. All we have is circumstantial evidence and speculation. On November 22, 1963, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who was president of the United States at that time, was assassinated while driving through Dallas, Texas. He was emergently taken to Parkland Memorial Hospital, where he was officially pronounced dead at 1 o'clock p.m. local time. Later that night, his brain, or what was left of it, was removed during his autopsy and has been the subject of controversy, speculation, and conspiracy theories ever since. America has been perplexed by the whereabouts of JFK's brain since 1966, when it mysteriously disappeared from the National Archives. And almost 60 years later, there are still those in the United States who ponder the true culprits behind John F. Kennedy's assassination. However, another inquiry looms large. What became of JFK's brain? While the late president's body rests in Arlington National Cemetery, his brain has remained missing since 1966. Was it pilfered to cover up evidence? Was it snatched by his brother? Or could it be that the brain was substituted before it even went missing? That's what we're going to be looking at tonight. So as always, to learn more, you'll have to tune in, and find out. However, before we get into what happened to JFK's brain, I have something really exciting I want to announce to you guys. I've already kind of hinted at it, maybe even directly said it, a couple of podcasts ago, but it is now officially official. Man, I am really excited to announce that the Parareality Podcast is going to be one of the official podcasts at the 4th annual Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Festival in Townsend, Tennessee on May the 4th of this year. The Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Festival is an outdoor, family-friendly, and pet-friendly event with a kid zone, live music, guest speakers, vendors, Bigfoot wood carvings, Bigfoot calling competitions, wrestling. There's going to be wrestling, and there's even going to be a 5K run the day before, I believe, or the morning before. And there's going to be, I don't know how many food trucks. There are a ton of food trucks available on site. Guest speakers include people like Ron Moorhead, who is producer of the Sierra Sounds, Russell Accord and Ronnie LeBlanc from the Expedition Bigfoot TV show. There's Turtle Man from Animal Planet, and the guys from Mountain Monsters are going to be there. I think Jeff is the only one that's not going to be present. Jeffro is not on the guest list, but everybody else from the Mountain Monsters crew is going to be there. So they've got there's a few more guests that are going to be there as well. Man, I've been to this event before, and it's one of the best of its kind. There's plenty of things to do and see, and the vendors are top rate. Now, tickets for this thing are just a little less than $14, which makes this a very affordable event, but parking at the event is going to cost you a little extra. There's even something they call a Very Important Believer or VIB event that's going to be on Friday, May the 3rd, where ticket holders to this event, they get to have dinner and they'll do like a little meet and greet with some of the speakers at the festival. Now, the tickets for this are separate, and it's a little pricey at like $200, but your VIB ticket gets you entry into the Tennessee Smokies baseball game, an exclusive VIB shirt, access to, of course, the special guest there at the event, food and beverages. This is a great event in a wonderful location, and I'm proud to be officially a part of it. Of course, I'm going to be doing a podcast from the festival and hopefully interviewing some people who've had a Bigfoot encounter. So if you've never been to the Smoky Mountains and you're looking for an excuse, this is it. This is your perfect excuse to go. The Smoky Mountains are not only America's most visited national park, but it's most beautiful as well. Bring your friends, bring your family, bring all of them, or your cryptid group, or whatever, and make a long weekend out of it. Have some fun at the festival, eat some good food, and visit the Great Smoky Mountains. Oh, and since you're going to be there, make sure you come by the Parareality booth and visit me. Just say hi. And if you are a fan of the podcast, if you're a regular listener of the podcast, if you come up and find the Parareality booth there, or actually it's outdoors, so it's going to be a tent. So if you find the Parareality tent and you're a regular listener, just come up to me and say this secret phrase. Are you ready? The secret phrase is, Dr. Jeff Meldrum sent me. If you say that to me, I'll give you some free show swag. So I hope to see some of you guys there. Remember, the secret phrase to get some free goodies for all of you regular listeners out there, Dr. Jeff Meldrum sent me. Now keep that between us. Don't go telling that to everybody. But if you come up to my booth, shake my hand and say, Dr. Jeff Meldrum sent me, I'll give you some free show swag. And I don't know what all I'm going to be doing there yet besides having a booth and giving out some swag and stuff. I'm definitely going to be trying to get some sort of, I say live podcast, but it's really not going to be broadcast live. It's going to be recorded live, but I'm hoping to get some sort of live podcast there for some people who've had some Bigfoot experiences or maybe have a story to tell or whatever, and maybe another event or two. I'm not going to be the only podcast there. There are going to be others, but I don't know who those are yet. So anyway, yeah, I'm very excited. And if you've never been to the Smokies and you're looking for something to do, you're looking for an excuse to go, and you like podcasts and topics like this and cryptids and especially Bigfoot, now's your chance to go to the Smokies. This is your perfect excuse. You really need to do it because it is a wonderful event, and I hope to see some of you there. Now, with that being said, take a listen to this.
Parareality is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network. For more information or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com.
Broadcast from a secret bunker somewhere outside of Nashville, Tennessee. This is the award-winning podcast, Parareality.
The story of John F. Kennedy's brain begins on the day of his death, November 22, 1963. The president was assassinated while driving through Dallas, Texas. In a mere 8 seconds, the world changed. Lee Harvey Oswald, a former Marine, leaned out of a sixth floor window and fired his rifle 3 times, bringing an end to the life of the 35th President of the United States. If you choose to believe that version, Vince, that is, but we're not here to talk about that. Later that night, an autopsy conducted at Bethesda Naval Hospital in D.C. revealed that the president had been shot twice from above and behind. Conspiracy theories have not stopped since. But we're not here to actually talk about that. We're here to talk about something else, right? I think that the JFK conspiracy theory, the assassination conspiracy theory, has been overdone. It's been overcooked. And that thing is more than well done. It is burnt and crispy. But the actions of the federal government on that day did nothing to quell the storm of public anger and curiosity surrounding the identity of the beloved president's killer. As an example, the Secret Service pressured the Dallas County Coroner's Office into surrendering the president's body before an autopsy could be performed. Now, this was in direct violation of state laws at the time. There are additional instances, but the most significant one for many of us conspiracy theorists is the disappearance of JFK's brain. Now, it was donated to the National Archives shortly after the assassination, and it vanished without a trace sometime in 1966, leaving no information and has been no sightings of it since that time. Former FBI agent Francis X. O'Neill Jr., who was present at the autopsy, said that there was not much of the brain left. More than half of the brain was missing. Now, as he observed the autopsy, the doctors carefully extracted the brain and placed it inside a white jar. In their autopsy report, the doctors made a note that the brain was preserved and taken away for further examination. And according to James Swanson's book, I believe that was written in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, it's called The End of Days, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, the brain was eventually transferred to a stainless steel container with a lid that could be screwed on and off. So a screw-top stainless steel lid container. The container was then transported to the National Archives. Now, upon arrival, the brain found its resting place in a secure room that was exclusively designated for Evelyn Lincoln, who was JFK's dedicated former secretary. Now, she was utilizing this space to organize all of his presidential documents. Now, why would you want to donate the brain to the National Archives? I mean, I understand this was an important event in United States history. However, I don't understand why having pieces of a brain in a jar was deemed something that would be worthy for being stored at the National Archives. That does not seem to be, to me, the proper place to store brain tissue. Now, I'm sure that there's other places that are more suitable for this than the National Archives. But then again, you know, you look at what are the National Archives, if not a museum, so to speak, right? So in museums, you've got, you know, jars of shit floating around in them, you know, on display, and they have jars of stuff in their warehouse, in their archives. So I guess it does kind of make sense in a certain from a certain point of view, because I mean, some museums do it all the time, but just I don't know. It just seems like the National Archives is not a place to store a former president's brain, especially one that's been shot up. Like according to O'Neill, he said there wasn't much of the brain left, and what was kind of mush, right? So, I mean, what was really in that? Regardless, though, by 1966, the brain, along with the tissue slides and other materials from the autopsy, had mysteriously vanished from the archives. And despite subsequent investigations, the whereabouts of these items have remained elusive to this very day. So the question lingers, where is JFK's brain? While the definitive answer remains unknown, numerous theories have emerged over the past several decades. Conspiracy theorists, such as myself, propose that JFK's brain holds the key to unraveling the truth behind his assassination. Now, officially, the autopsy concluded that he had been struck twice from a position above and behind. Now, this aligns with the belief that Lee Harvey Oswald, positioned on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Repository, fatally shot the president. However, there exists a conspiracy theory suggesting that Kennedy's brain provides evidence contradicting that official account of his assassination. This theory is commonly known as the Grassy Knoll theory, and it says that Kennedy was shot from the front. Now, interestingly, doctors at Parkland Hospital in Dallas also reached that same conclusion. And consequently, some proponents of this theory speculate that JFK's brain was stolen to conceal this very information. Now, nevertheless, Swanson, who wrote that book, he presents an alternate perspective. While he acknowledges that the likelihood of the brain being stolen is definitely a possibility, he proposes a culprit, a completely different culprit, Kennedy's own brother, Robert F. Kennedy. In his book, Swanson wrote, and I quote, "My conclusion is that Robert Kennedy did take his brother's brain. Not to conceal evidence of a conspiracy, but perhaps to conceal evidence of the true extent of President Kennedy's illnesses, or perhaps to conceal evidence of the number of medications that President Kennedy was taking." So this isn't something that I see a lot whenever I watch TV shows or documentaries about, you know, conspiracy theories surrounding President Kennedy's assassination. I don't see a lot of stuff discussed in online or even in a lot of books or whatever about this thing. But it could be that there's something to this. Now, if you've you may have heard of this. I don't know. But the president, JFK, had apparently a multitude of health problems that he concealed from the public eye. And additionally, he was relying on various medications like painkillers, anti-anxiety drugs, stimulants, sleeping pills, and hormones to counteract what he had going on, which was supposedly a pretty bad adrenal deficiency. Now, this, to me, little-known explanation holds some merit here, particularly due to the posthumous revelation of JFK's health issues. Medical records that have been made public, they show that JFK relied on painkillers, anti-anxiety drugs, stimulants, sleeping pills, and hormones to sustain his well-being and his functionality during the final 8 years of his life. That was a long time. And these times of heightened stress, doctors would increase the dosage just to get him through the day. So you can imagine the stress that you can go through being a president, Some days are better than others, so some days the dosages would go up, some days they would go down. And he hid all of this from the public. And like I said, this isn't something that, as far as I'm concerned, that is widespread public knowledge. You don't see or hear this discussed a lot in documentaries, television shows, books, stuff like that. So why, I don't know. I don't know exactly when the medical records were released, but it hasn't been all that long. Like I said, this is a 60-year-old case here, right? And we're no closer to solving it today than we have than we were the day that it happened. So one of the factors that contributed to JFK's popularity among the masses was that he was young and he was charismatic and he was considered to be good-looking for his time. A young man burdened with health problems didn't align with this image, and it's really plausible that RFK, his brother, wanted to prevent this from becoming a part of JFK's legacy. Another theory says that RFK stole JFK's brain to prevent its public display, as indicated by some confidential government documents that have been made public. Now, this also makes perfectly good sense. One of the documents says, and I'm quoting here, "Circumstantial evidence tends to show that Robert Kennedy either destroyed these materials or otherwise rendered them inaccessible." It would seem to indicate that Robert Kennedy then decided to retain possession of all physical specimen evidence and transferred only the autopsy photographs and X-rays to the government. Now, according to this book published in 2013, titled The End of Days, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, it was initially suggested that an investigation ordered by Ramsey Clark, who was the attorney general at the time, pointed to RFK as the culprit. Now, the guy Swanson, who wrote that 2013 book, he says that the container that had the brain in it was originally kept in a filing cabinet within the Secret Service office. That's nuts. So brain in a jar, kept in a filing cabinet, some rando filing cabinet in the Secret Service. I'm sure it wasn't a rando filing cabinet, but it sounds better to say it that way, right? But still, it's still just nuts to think that the brain of the president, what was left of it, was in a jar in a filing cabinet in somebody's office. That's just nuts. But yet, coming as something from the government, that sounds exactly like something that would happen. Trust me, I work for the government, and I know how the government operates, and that sounds very plausible. Now, eventually, this brain in the jar was transferred to a footlocker. Yep, a footlocker, along with other pieces of evidence, and taken to the National Archives, where it was placed in that secure room that was being used by JFK's former secretary, Miss Lincoln. However, in a twist of fate, the brain went missing. In October of 1966, it came to light that the brain, along with the tissue slides and some other materials from the autopsy, had disappeared, and they've never been seen, never been recovered. Astonishingly, some recent government documents seem to support this theory, stating that RFK wanted to retain possession of the brain to prevent it from being publicly displayed. Now, Marshall said that he was concerned that these materials would be RFK was concerned that these materials would be placed on public display, and he wanted to just dispose of them altogether to eliminate this from happening. Now, he emphasized that he doesn't believe anyone other than Robert Kennedy would have known what happened to the brain and the other materials, and is certain that obtaining or locating all of this stuff is absolutely not possible at all anymore. Why? Because on November 20th of 1968, Robert Kennedy was tragically assassinated shortly after he won the California primary in his quest to secure the Democratic nomination for the presidency. So everybody knows this story too. Palestinian-born Sirhan Bishra Sirhan shot him 3 times, and that led to his death the next day when he failed to regain consciousness. So if Robert Kennedy did indeed take his brother's brain and hide it away somewhere or just dispose of it completely, he kept that secret and carried it with him to his grave. The question of whether JFK's brain was stolen or not is one thing. However, there's also something peculiar about the archive photos depicting the president's brain. So in 1998, the Assassinations Records Review Board raised a troubling query, suggesting that the photographs that showed JFK's brain may actually display a different brain altogether. Douglas Horn, the board's chief analyst for military records, said that he was 90 to 95% certain that the photographs in the archives were not of President Kennedy's brain. And he said, and I quote, "If they aren't, that can mean only one thing, that there has been a cover-up of the medical evidence." So O'Neill, who was the FBI agent present at Kennedy's assassination, if you remember him from the very top of this podcast episode here, he also said that official photos of the brain didn't match what he had witnessed. He said, and this is a direct quote from him, "This looks almost like a complete brain, which is altogether different from the destroyed brain that he had seen." Remember, he said that there was very little of it left, and what was there was kind of in pieces. But what he saw in the photos said it looked like, he says it looked like a complete brain. And he goes on further to say that, and this is a quote, "One thing that I've never been able to erase from my mind is being on the back of the car looking down at the president who was lying with his face in Mrs. Kennedy's lap. The right side of his face is up, and I can see that his eyes are fixed. There's blood everywhere. I can see the gunshot wound in the room. I can see the skull, and I can see that there is no more brain matter left. That is something I could never and have never been able to erase from my mind." So you can imagine that if you were tasked to safeguarding the President of the United States. Let me get a drink here. You can imagine if you were tasked with safeguarding the life of the President of the United States, and then he got shot on your watch, as you ran up there to try to save him from further harm, throw yourself in front of the assassin's bullets or whatever, you can imagine if you look down and you see that side. That's not something that you just see every day, right? So you look down and you see that sight. That's going to stick with you for the rest of your life. It's bad enough if you see just some random guy get shot up, right? But it's a whole completely different scenario when the person that's getting shot and killed is the President of the United States of America. And then you're tasked with preventing that very thing from happening. So you know that this is a historic event and that your role in this event is not going to be viewed as a favorable one, you know? So I imagine that there's a lot of things that happened during that time that is etched in this poor guy's mind, and he'll never, ever, you know, could never get rid of it. And so I believe him wholeheartedly when he says, I looked down and I saw what was left of the president's brain. I was present at the autopsy, and I got a really good look one more time at what was left of the president's brain. And now I'm looking at these pictures, these official pictures for the National Archives, and this is not what I saw because this looks like a complete brain. I totally believe him. But, you know, what happened to the brain? The findings of the report revealed several inconsistencies regarding the individuals responsible for examining JFK's brain, the method of sectioning, and the type of photographs that were taken. Now, ultimately, the enigma surrounding JFK's brain mirrors the many unanswered questions surrounding his assassination. Was the brain taken? Was it stolen? Was it simply misplaced? Or was it stolen and substituted? To this day, the truth remains unknown. Now, similar instances of theft are not uncommon, as the remains of other notable captivating historical figures have also fallen victim to organ robbery. And I'm going to go over those here in just a second, but I want to get back to RFK and his stance on JFK's legacy. So we have documents, medical records that have been released that say, okay, Kennedy had adrenal insufficiency, and here's all the things that we were giving him at that time just to keep him going. But yet that was something that wasn't known to the public. This guy, I mean, they called, you know, his, I'm not going to say his reign, but they called his presidency like Camelot. You know, I mean, he was a young president. He was good looking. He had some young children. He had a young, extremely popular and good looking wife. You know, Kennedy is the reason that men don't wear hats in public anymore. Up until he became president, when men would go out of the house and they would have their three-piece suit on with their tie and a hat. And he was the one that popularized men not wearing hats anymore. So when JFK stopped wearing a hat in public, so did everybody else, you know. So here's this guy, he had influence, and he was young, and he was popular. Totally different than the old white men that are running our nation today. No, none of them are popular. None of them are freaking young. None of them are good-looking or charismatic. You know, this guy had it all. And he ruffled some feathers. You know, I'm not going to get into JFK assassination theories because, like I said, that's just been cooked to death. There's nothing new that anyone's going to bring to the table. It's just rehashing all the old shit that you've heard 1,000 times or more before. So, you know, it stands to reason that if he really was sick and they were hiding all this stuff, that Robert Kennedy and even the rest of his family didn't want that to be part of his legacy. They would want to keep that hidden. Now, why would you want to steal the brain because of all that? Well, I don't think if you've got a brain in a jar that there are going to be too many people who are going to want to come in and say, oh, I want to take a piece of this brain out and we want to run some medical tests on it, you know. But you can find out a lot of stuff from doing some sort of testing on what's left of the brain. And maybe the family, or RFK specifically, maybe he, you know, was looking into the future and saying, I may not be able to do much with it now, but, you know, 60 years from now, 100 years from now, they may be able to, you know, find out stuff that we don't want the public knowing. So he just took it. it also stands to, and look, so let's just say it wasn't RFK's idea. You know, hell, maybe he didn't even know how sick JFK was. Maybe the only person that knew was Mrs. Kennedy, Jackie. So if Jacqueline Kennedy knew that he was this sick and was taking all these meds and she wanted it, her and Jack, as he was known, wanted to keep this from the public eye, it's also plausible that they would not have told anybody else, just so you could have this deniable plausibility, right? So you don't tell your brother, you don't tell the rest of your family, you just keep it between you and the wife, okay? So maybe RFK didn't know, but Jackie did. But after the president's dead, she's no longer first lady. She no longer holds a lot of power, right? So who's the person that she can turn to that can get stuff done? If you need if the brain to disappear and you need some medical reports and tissue slides and stuff like that to disappear, but you can't do it, who do you turn to? You turn to the only other person that you know would have the same interest in making all this disappear that you do, and that would be his brother, who is deep, deep in the government, right? So he can just go in there, take the shit, and walk out, or he can have someone do it for him. So that makes a lot of sense to me. It also makes sense that they just didn't want JFK's brain to be on public display so people could come oogle over it, you know, ooh and ah, oh, there's Kennedy's brain where he got it all shot up. You know, they just didn't want people coming into the National Archives, can I check out Kennedy's brain for the day? I can understand that too. You just don't want, that's like a form of, I don't know, defiling a body, you know, where you have this on display and you just have gobs and gobs of people, you know, it's like some sort of freaking sideshow at the carnival, you know, and we've all been to those things and you pay your money or get your ticket or whatever. And you go and you look at the fish boy or, you know, frog man or whatever, you know, it's not really real, you know, but still, you know, some of those things are real corpses, and not fish boy and frog man or whatever, but you know, there could be some real corpses of like some deformed people in there or something like that. And are mummified. Oh, this was the guy that shot some famous cowboy and here's his mummified remains or some crap like that. We've all been to some sideshow and paid our 10 cents to see that crap. And you know, I'm just as guilty of it as everybody else is, but it's disrespectful to whoever it is that is on display. And every time that I've ever done it, and yep, I've done it multiple times, and every time I feel greasy when I do it, but I did it anyway. So that's on me, you know. But yeah, I can see where RFK and even Jackie would be like, we don't want this type of disrespect to happen to JFK. He deserves better than that. So they just conspired. And like I said, what better person to get it than someone who's already involved in the government, and it's his brother, and has, you know, ties and connections and deep pockets. And, you know, he can just go the right person. If he's not going to do it himself, I guarantee you he knew who to go to. Go the right person. And hey, I'm going to give you some duckies. Here you go. I need you to do this for me. I need my brother's brain. I need those tissue slides, and I need this paperwork. I need it on my desk, you know, in the next 48 hours. And if you bring it to me, there's more stuff in it for you. There's more money in it for you. Well, yes, sir. Here I go. How many millions of dollars is it going to cost me to do this? Yeah, this is going to be great. You know, so either one of those two situations are plausible. Makes perfectly good sense. Whether he was sick or not, which, once again, I think we know that he's sick because we have the medical records that prove that he was sick, right? So maybe it was just a combination of the two, which also makes sense. it's not out of the realm of possibility that RFK could have just walked in those National Archives after everything was all closed up. You know, shit, I'm sure he probably knew Lincoln, Mrs. Lincoln, who was the secretary, and if she was using the office where all that stuff was stolen, and she's like, I'm getting all of his presidential records together, man, RFK just calls her up. I need to come see you. I need you to come to my office. She comes to his office. He says, look, this is what we're going to do. This is why. I need you to do this for me. I need you to bring this stuff here. She was there all the time, right? All she had to do was just put the shit in a bag and walk out with it. Or just wait until after hours until RFK shows up, opens the door for him. Hey, look, there's the filing cabinet with the shit in it. Get it and take it and leave. You know, it's very well possible that she was in cahoots with the family to get all that stuff done. Very, very possible. But once again, we'll never know. Everybody's dead, you know, that could tell us. So we'll never, ever know. So in conclusion here, like I said, there's been similar instances of theft throughout history on the remains of other notable and captivating historical figures. It seems that people have had a long time obsession with dead people's body parts. After Albert Einstein's death in 1955, his brain was removed without permission from the family, by the way, and it was studied by pathologist Thomas Harvey. It was sliced up and mounted on slides, and many of these slides are now lost, probably in some collector's collection somewhere. Who knows? The Moscow Brain Institute collected and studied the brains of many prominent Russian scientists and intellectuals, most famously that of communist revolutionary Vladimir Lenin. Austrian composer Joseph Haydn's head, his entire head, was stolen from his grave for the sake of phrenology. Now, phrenology is the belief that the shape and size of the skull influence a person's character. When Beethoven died, phrenology was still booming, and one grave digger claimed that he had been offered 1,000 florins to deposit the head of Beethoven in a certain place. Now, during the composer's autopsy, ear bones and locks of his hair were taken, and when his body was later exhumed, fragments of his skull were kept for souvenirs. And what is presumed to be Mozart's skull is held in the International Mozarteum Foundation in Salzburg. The remainder of his skeleton is missing since he was buried in a grave that was dug up and reused some years later after his death in 1791. So his whole entire skeleton's gone, probably got tossed out or something like that. Who knows? Could have gotten busted up and sold to collectors. Who knows? But the only thing we got left that we know that's Mozart is his head. Well, we think it's his head. It's his skull. We're not really too sure about that. Even Napoleon Bonaparte didn't escape this. His body parts are also assumed to be scattered. His intestines were held in London and destroyed during a bombing raid during the Blitz of London in World War II. But his penis is believed to be owned by the daughter of John Latimer, a New Jersey urologist who bought it at an auction in 1977. Now, I think that it has been proven that that was not Napoleon's penis. I don't even think it was actually a human penis. I'm not even sure if it was even a penis at all. But, so it doesn't matter. It's going to this thing that people steal body parts, right? So it's like, oh, here's Napoleon's penis. If you don't know Napoleon, even though he was short in stature, was rumored to have a big penis. So, you know, somebody thought, oh, look, I'll make some money off of that rumor and I'll sell this penis. People will, you know, hey, never miss out on an opportunity to make money, right? In 2009, two of Galileo's fingers and a tooth were discovered after they had been removed by admirers and treated like holy relics 95 years after this guy's death. So you've got time and time again, example after example of famous people whose body parts have been stolen, collected, traded, sold on the black market. You know, it's just not something that a missing body part from someone famous is not exclusive to John F. Kennedy. That's what I'm trying to say. And as far as John F. Kennedy's brain goes, whether it was really in the National Archives or not, if it was stolen and why, will continue to be mysteries for the foreseeable future, because no one can locate the canister that it was in or its contents. No matter whose brain might be in there, it's gone. We don't know where it's at. The fact of the matter is that the material, including the brain that was turned over by his physician, never belonged to the National Archives in the first place. All that material actually belonged to the Kennedy family. And according to a spokesperson for the National Archives, a secretary of Robert F. Kennedy came to collect the artifacts a few days after George C. Buckley gave the material to Evelyn Lincoln. Personnel at the National Archives don't know what happened to the material because it was never in the custody of the archives in the first place. And even if it was, like I just said, it did not belong to the National Archives. That was part of President Kennedy's body. The medical records were confidential. Those belonged to President Kennedy himself, and by him dying, the custody of that passed along to his immediate family, which would have been Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy. So none of it belonged to the National Archives, and the Kennedy family was well within their rights, both legally and morally and ethically, to claim all of those things and take them away. So either RFK took them, or he paid someone to have it done, or even Jackie O took them or got someone to do it. It doesn't matter. I think that the family was 100% involved in taking these things out of the National Archives and bringing them home. Now, whether they kept them or destroyed them, we will probably never, ever know, because everybody that was involved in that whole entire thing is dead. And they took all of their secrets to the grave with them. So Kennedy's brain, unless we find a jar somewhere that has a label on it that says Kennedy's brain, and then we can do some DNA analysis and determine that, yep, that's Kennedy's brain, we're never going to know what happened to it. We'll never find it. And it's going to remain a mystery. Like I said, it's a conspiracy theory within a conspiracy theory. Who killed Kennedy and what happened to his brain? The answers to those questions we will probably never know. Well, that about does it for tonight's episode of Parareality. Thank you for listening. But before I close it out, I got one more thing I want to tell you about.
If you'd like to leave a comment about tonight's episode of Parareality, have an idea for a topic you'd like me to cover, or a story you'd like to tell, send me an email, sandman@parareality.com, or call the Secret Bunker at 615-692-1170 and leave me a message. Don't forget that by leaving me your message, you're giving me permission to play your comment back on the podcast. Also, don't forget to follow Parareality on social media. You can find the podcast on Facebook by looking for sandman.parareality, or you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram under the username @ParareelRadio. You can also find Parareality on YouTube under the username Parareality1. That's Parareality with the number 1 out behind it. Parareality.com is the home of the podcast on the web, And it's also where you can find paranormal news from all around the world in the Paranews section. And you can listen to past episodes in the archive section, all for the price of absolutely nothing. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can buy yourself some swag in the official Parareality shop while you're there. You can also support the podcast for free by leaving me a 3-star or better review on whatever podcast app you're listening on. Your reviews help the podcast to grow and reach even more people, and I would appreciate it very much. I'd love to hear from you guys, so send me those emails. Thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed tonight's episode of Parareality. The next episode will air on April 19th at 8 o'clock p.m. Central U.S. time. That's Friday, April 19th, 8 o'clock p.m. Central U.S. time. I'm going to be interviewing psychic medium Barbara With. That's W-I-T-H. Barbara With. I've got a great interview lined up with her. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. So make sure you turn on, tune in, and find out. I hope that this podcast opens your mind up to new ways of thinking, expands your consciousness, and produces a change in the way you see the world. If you wish to change, you must lift the veil of ignorance that has been cast over your eyes. Only then will you see the true power of the universe. Don't forget, Parareality is going to be one of the official podcasts at the 4th annual Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Festival in beautiful Townsend, Tennessee, right on the peaceful side of the Smoky Mountains. If you guys are going to be attending, please find the Parareality booth, or tent, should I say, and come say hi. And don't forget the secret phrase Dr. Jeff Meldrum sent me to get some free Parareality swag while you're at the event. If you're looking for an excuse to come to the Smoky Mountains, now's the perfect time. There's still plenty of tickets. You better hurry up, though, because tickets are selling fast, and hotels, motels, cabins, and all that sorts of stuff are filling up around there. So you better hurry up, because it's, 30-something days away. It's just to say a month away. So you better hurry up and get those tickets and book those hotel rooms. Come by the Parareality tent and say, hey, remember the secret phrase Dr. Jeff Meldrum sent me to get you some free Parareality swag. If you had a Bigfoot experience and you want to be on the podcast, let me know. We're signing people up to be part of a live podcast episode. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. I hope that you have a great evening, a wonderful weekend. I'll be back in 2 weeks with an interview with Barbara With, and hopefully I will be seeing some of you guys at the 4th annual Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Festival in Townsend, Tennessee on May 4th. Good night, everybody.
If you wish to change, you must first lift the veil of ignorance that has been cast over your eyes. Only then will you see the true power of the universe.